Our next guest's mental health woes played out on a very public stage. And being an actor, he took to the stage to help his own and others' recovery. In 2009, after years of battling depression, the actor Rob Mokoraka opted for suicide by confronting the police. He rang police to warn an armed man was loose in the Auckland suburb of Point Chevalier, described himself, and then ran up the street with a weapon. When he, was disguised as a weapon, when he refused to comply with a police order to stay put, Rob was shot in the chest. Rob has taken his experience of what came before, during and after that point in his life and packaged it into a one-man play called Shot Bro, Confessions of a Depressed Bullet, which he's toured all over New Zealand. His central message, get help before it's too late. Rob's journey is detailed in a new documentary, Shot Bro, screening on Māori TV and the spin-off website. And he is in us in the Auckland studio. Kia ora and welcome, Rob. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Kia ora, Catherine. Thank you for having me.
This has been a journey of many years. Are you still so passionate? Is it still so important to you that you perform and that people confront our mental health challenges?
It isn't very important to me. It's also my healing tool. It's a double-edged sword, so to speak, that as I'm sharing, I'm learning. And I'm just providing safe spaces for people to share. And I've been told multiple times that I've got something that people relate to, and please keep going. And as long as I'm well mentally, physically and spiritually, I can keep going.
And it is theatre with a difference. It is very intimate. Explain how you introduce the show and welcome the audience.
Well, in a sense, I'm stripping it right back to its bare bones. When people arrive, communities arrive, wherever we're presenting, myself and my sound technician, who's my kaitiaki, we are greeting and meeting everybody coming into the venue. And it's just getting to know them, say, hey, this is Rob, he seems quite normal, seems like a nice guy, what are we in for? And there's no lighting, it's just whatever house lights are in there, and there's nothing fancy. And it's just making sure that they feel safe. Like, I'm the air hostess steward, /steward, who's like, hi, welcome to flight, Shot Bro. Buckle up, it's going to be funny, dark, real, and educational. And so we're just building that trust from the moment they walk in the door.
And again, even after the play, is it the case that people don't just necessarily wander off into the night? Often people will stay and will converse. It is a very much a living theatre, or not interactive on stage, but perhaps interactive in the way people respond.
Oh, absolutely. After each presentation slash show, we have a wānanga, or a forum where people have the chance to breathe and process what they just experienced, which was emotional, and they laughed and some people cried. And it's a chance for people to stand up and go, hey man, thank you, because this is how I relate. And because we're under the korowai of the Shot Bro kaupapa, meaning that that space is sacred and it's safe, that's why people feel compelled to talk. And afterwards we have food and cups of tea, because people who may not have spoken want to speak later over a cup of tea, so they don't have to stand around feeling awkward. They grab something, okay, I'll wait till this guy's free and then I'll talk.
We see this from the documentary. We see that people come forward and they share their own pain and they share their own loss with you. And how do you receive that? That's a lot of giving for you to do. Does it also, as you say, give back to you?
Absolutely, but I had to figure out ways of how to navigate this so I don't hold people's grief. And I fell over a few times, head face first, on my first year in particular, because I was trying to hold everyone's problems and save the universe. I realised that after consulting with a lot of people who are the healers or psychiatrists, you need to find a safe space, a safe way to process yourself. So I'm just there to safely hold the space. I'm not there to hold the problems. It's just to safely hold that space.
Do people sometimes come back later to you and say, this really made a difference? Do you get that kind of feedback?
I get that a lot, and it is incredibly humbling when people come up and say, thank you, you saved my life. I was going to do this thing. Thank you, you saved my marriage. Now I understand why my husband or my wife is like this. I get emails, I get private messages, and it's all incredibly humbling. And I'm just grateful that they felt brave enough to share. And I always ask, have you got support around you now?
You see, that's the thing, isn't it? If we look at how we are doing collectively as a country, are there not enough opportunities for people to have those moments where they see something either in themselves or in a loved one with the kind of clarity that they see from experiencing this show?
Yeah, I guess that we haven't been brought up in a way to show vulnerability. It's like we have to unlearn some old habits to be able to be vulnerable, which is actually courageous. And to go, hey, I'm feeling really crap, and this is why my behaviour has been like this over the last month or over the last 10 years, because I don't know how to process these triggers, emotional triggers.
Is that in some ways what the show does best? I'm asking you to sort of, I suppose, receive what the audience receives, and I'm sure that'll be different for each and every person. But does it illuminate things? And do you deliberately, perhaps, in the way you've constructed the show, illuminate things that people just otherwise might not see?
Absolutely. It is strategically created. It took me 7 years of writing and workshops with good friends. And my friend Edna Daniels helped me unpack it and create a structure that is safe for me and safe for communities.
When did the drive... Well, you're an actor, so much like a writer. This is your breath, isn't it? This is fundamental, I'm presuming anyway, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's fundamental to the way you process life as acting. Is that fair?
I'm actually stripping it right back. I'm not acting.
True.
I am being me, 150% me. So in the sense that I'm using the theatrical construct, but it's also imbued with a lot of tikanga Māori to make sure that the space is physically, spiritually safe, so to speak. And so I've woven these elements together. And it's stripping it right back. But once again, I've had to learn how to stand in my own truth. And I've had a lot of help along the way.
At what point did you start then? And what point were you okay to start the writing and the structuring of what is now Shopbro? Where were you at in your own journey of healing? Because what happened to you was extreme.
Yes.
And at what point did you start this part of the journey?
I was in hospital. My guts cut wide open, traumatised mentally, physically, spiritually. Family, friends looking at me wanting to cry when they saw the state I was in. And I was trying to figure it out. So as a writer, I was just writing thoughts, feelings, then some poetry, and then more short stories, and just trying to figure out, why am I in this state of trauma? What happened to me? Why did I do this? And then with a lot of writings over a long period of time, I just had them in a drawer. And I slowly formulated a first draft, which the Mental Health Foundation came on board to help me get the first opening or presentation of it up in Whangarei in 2016.
What were some of the challenges? Because there's humour in here, and there is humour in, you know, so much of humanity, but there must be people sometimes who think, I cannot find any humour in the situation I'm in. So what were some of the things, as it evolved, where you had to make decisions, and was humour one of them?
In anything, this is my perspective and from some of my experiences, you've got to make things warm and safely humorous, because these things are too heavy to hold.
Yeah.
And when I say humour, that's a metaphor for light, to put more light into the shadows, to more light into the hurt that needs time to process. That's why I use a lot of humour. And it's also a trick, by the way, to get your security systems down, to get to your heart.
What is it that you want people who come to learn about so many of the elements of what you've been through? for, you know, even understanding how someone got to the decisions that you made, if you can, I mean, they are decisions, but one wonders what state of mind you were in when you were making them. What is it that you most want people to understand from your experiences and those of others that you've brought into the writing of this?
So I'll just go back a little bit. As we were creating the Shopro presentation show, my director, Edna Daniel, said, "What did suicidal Rob in 2009 need to hear?"
Mm.
And it was great, so we kept that in the back of our minds as we constructed this. And suicidal Rob needed to know that he's not alone. He's not crazy, and he's worth it. And the underlying message is, please don't take your life, because you are loved.
You went through not only what you went through as suicidal Rob, but the profile and the media coverage of the story, again, on the scale of things you were dealing with at the time, how much extra pressure and stress did that add?
That was trauma upon trauma at the time, with the way that the media were reacting and coming after my family and coming after my friends. I was still traumatised physically and mentally and emotionally, so I was very lucky that also my agent at the time and other good friends came to bat for me, because I couldn't defend myself. I was traumatised with my guts cut wide open in a hospital. So I, thanks to many friends and even strangers who stood up for me and said, "Excuse me, we'll take this from here. Rob's too traumatised. Can you please leave this guy alone to heal?" And I'm so grateful, forever grateful, to everybody who did that for me.
If we look at some of the themes, again, in Shopro, I mean, one of them is confessions of a depressed bullet. And,
yes,
in fact, the bullet becomes a character as well.
Yeah.
Talk me through this strand of the show and, again, its deeper relevance.
Well, it's like a slalom ski slope. You're going zigzagging down really fast. And we created this. Edna Daniels, my director and good friend, we created this in a way that we are putting so much humour and light, but we're putting so much authenticity into my vulnerability. And so when people see the humour, but they see the vulnerability of a male and of a Māori male, going, "Hey man, I'm not perfect. I've stuffed up. These are all the things that I've stuffed up in my life that I've been beating myself up about. But I've realised that I'm not my past, and without judgment, we just want to be heard and listened to." And people start to feel and see that, because it's like CrossFit on stage. Mm-hmm. That people see me sweat. While they're laughing, I'm talking and sweating and sharing, and they go, "Well, I can really feel this energy. I can feel the energy of his humour and his aroha, but I can feel the energy of the darkness that took him." And those in the know, people who have been there, go, "Thanks, I didn't know how to articulate that. Thank you so much. I didn't know how to say this to my wife. And if it's a teenager, I didn't know how to say this to my parents." So all it's doing is setting a platform for people to watch, observe, and not feel my heaviness, but go, "Wow, finally, we'll be able to articulate this in a safe space."
There's a line, moments into the doco, quoting, "I come from a long line of bullets who fuck a papa back to the land wars."
Yes.
So again, these are the deeper layers again. Our pain can go very deep and very long.
Yes, and that's tapping into intergenerational trauma, and looking... Well, not that it's explained in Shopro, but I'm looking at intergenerational trauma, and that's through your mother's line, your father's line. Then you understand a little bit more about why you are. And it's not to hold that heaviness, it's just to go, "Oh, these are the traits of some of my ancestors. And so, right, that's why I'm like this. And that's why I was hidden away in some family archives and were not spoken about for years."
These events were so high profile, terribly traumatic for you, but so high profile. But this wasn't the only crisis, and for you and in your young life as a young man.
Yeah.
And can you explain to us, being that age and stage, what it was that you needed. Were there ever moments where things could have happened differently? What did your experience as a young man illustrate about that? Again, we need to know.
I suppose, like, I'm very open in the documentary, and I address about me doing Shopbro and then having to see a psychiatrist again because I had memories of being molested. And I compartmentalised them in such a way that my brain said, these aren't your memories, these are someone else's you're holding on to. And that's how I was dealing with it until I saw a shrink again and confided in some close friends. So it's unpacking that, which is one of the core to my trauma. And then also, in your as a child, right, if the adults don't have the skills or the tools to navigate trauma, stress, pressure, you'll just copy how they deal with it. And that's society as well. And if I'm to quote Brené Brown, Auntie Brené, she's amazing. A lot of people don't know how to process pain and hurt, so they offload it onto others. And that's across the board, no matter what culture you are.
The other lesson from that is, like, it's not like you hit adulthood or even have one crisis and you are healed. You had to go back again. You had to go deeper. You had to get to the heart of it. And it's important to realise that our mental health and our healing is an ongoing journey, yeah?
Yes. Yes.
We can't pay someone something and come out fine the other side. We are complex and complicated, and it is an ongoing journey.
Oh, absolutely. I had a very good friend. He said he's very business, and he said he went to a first-time psychologist, and he goes, I'd like to be healed by the end of December. Thank you. And I laughed when he told me that.
I will pay on time.
I laughed, and I understood, because he wanted it done and dusted. But as you said, this is, and I say this in Shopbro, at the end of each presentation, it's an ongoing journey.
That is a brave thing to do as well, because here you were doing this work, here you were, and as you say, it goes both ways. You give, but you also get back from it. But at some point you accept again that actually I need help again, and you seek it, and that's the critical thing, isn't it? You go and you get the help.
Yes. And I'd like to share something with you. At times, my ego had got in the way and delayed me asking for help. And because the voice said, you should know all this by now. Why don't you have all the tools, Rob? You're not as good as you think you are. And that ego got in the way. And literally, I've got three people I can call at any time with various skill sets that will just listen to me and give me great, positive options of how to process things.
So you've built a support network?
Yes.
I'm sure you have a broad network, but there's an intimate network that knows you and you know they're there.
Definitely, I have an intimate and close-knit circle, and the communities and organisations that I've met who have hosted Shopbro, they follow my social media, and sometimes if they see a photo of me on tour looking a bit tired, they ring me and they go, hey, are you looking after yourself? You look a bit ragged. And I'm like, oh, you got me. Actually, I'm a bit exhausted. And just that sort of those little texts, those little phone calls, and I do the same for them. It's a form of aroha, form of love, form of compassion and caring. So I take that on board and go, thank you, my best friend, for pointing out what I'm trying to illustrate for other people.
Rob Mokoraka is our guest. He has his one-man play, of course, Shopbro, Confessions of a Depressed Bullet, which he's toured all over the country. His journey's detailed in a new documentary, Shopbro, which is screening on Māori TV and on the spin-off website. 27 minutes past 10 it is on 9 to noon. Let's talk about the intergenerational, because I think you just touched on it then, how the patterns from what we see and learn become entrenched in many aspects of our behaviours can be passed on. Your dad, I think, a military man and a Vietnam vet, and
yes,
you just know as soon as you say those things, he would have been carrying his own traumas. And do you look back now and see perhaps in him things you recognise, things you've become more and more knowledgeable about?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I love my dad. I love him a lot. And anyone who's been through a war serving your country, you're traumatised when you come back. And I'm going on to military bases. Now I'm presenting on NZDF bases around New Zealand. And I see reflections of my dad. And it's having processes in place, say, at your work. The military have some of these processes is to defrag with a therapist. And if you don't have these tools and safe spaces to unpack what you've experienced, you will just carry that for an eternity. And I know for a fact my dad is still healing. And he's doing a great job of it. I know quite a few of his Vietnam veteran mates, and they're all at varying degrees of healing.
Your dad talks very openly in the documentary. It must have been hard, I guess, to watch him talk about how he felt about what happened to you. But again, this is about being real. Being real is the start to healing.
Yes. Because my dad, he said he wouldn't speak on camera, and he told me that for a month or two. I think the beauty of the documentary makers, Jess Feast, and the DOP, Mike Jonathan, they were such lovely people, and they got to know my family, and that Dad agreed to talk and to show a bit of the photo albums of my sister and myself. So I stepped outside because I didn't want to impede what my dad was going to say freely, and deep down I wasn't sure if I wanted to hear it. So when I did watch it on the doco, I was quite teary-eyed and also proud of my dad, because that was not what he wanted to do, but he did it.
It's telling, isn't it, that your first thought when you woke up in hospital, in the state that you were in physically and emotionally, was one of a son thinking, gosh, I hope my dad doesn't know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to give away a bit of a moment. Isn't that telling that even in that state, that's the first thing a son thinks is, I hope my dad doesn't know.
Yeah.
You've got children of your own?
Yeah,
two daughters?
Two daughters, yes.
Yep. And so how do you talk to them about where you've been and how you're doing? And how have you talked about this stuff with them?
Well, I've talked with their mums. And I had a chat, and we navigated as parents, as loving parents who've got beautiful daughters. And I sort of simplified it for my eldest daughter, and with their mum's permission, I said, look, you know Dad's still doing this show called Shopbroker Fashion, it's a depressed bullet. She goes, yes, I know, Dad, it's about depression. I've read up about depression. I said, right, did you know that Dad also provoked the police to shoot him and he was shot in the chest? She stopped eating lunch. She went, what? I went, yeah, that's something your mother and I wanted to share with you also. She's really intelligent and emotionally intelligent. But the good thing is we could share this. And I said, look, if you've got any questions, you can ask me anytime. You can ask your mum and ask your favourite auntie, who she loves. And it's like if you need someone to process this with. And she, on occasion when we text and I ring my daughters and wherever I am in the country, about to do shop, I call them, and my eldest girl in particular says, good luck, Dad. And I said, thank you, my darling, because she knows that I'm going around the country so other people don't get hurt like I did.
Both girls. Yeah. How are we doing? You know, we've campaigned so long on mental health issues. We've got a big budget sitting there by the looks of it that's been allocated. We've got tremendous stresses in our community at the moment, economic and otherwise. We've got the Royal Commission happening finally. Into what happened to people in state care and the abuse of people in religious institutions. Like, there's a lot going on at the moment. And are we collectively, as a community, as public services, anywhere near getting there what we need to do so that people will, as you send the message, get help before it's too late?
Look, everyone, all organisations are doing the best that they can. I know that for a fact, with the greatest intentions to help people. No system is perfect, but all I say to everybody is, especially organisations, is you've got to put aroha, compassion, into the room, into the kōrero. And you've got to create that safe environment. You can have $1 million, but the platform is not strong, nothing's going to change. the best way, my friend in the music industry who was observing the mental health system, he said to me, oh, so it's like the foundations are rotten and people are throwing millions and millions of dollars to put new lino and carpet on top of it, but the foundations are still rotten. I went, yes, you could say that. Another way you could delicately say is that the system needs updating, and all that's lacking in these systems is compassion.
Yes. Exactly what you do in that room and the way you begin and the way you end what you do on stage. Because it's intimate, it's personal, it gets to the heart of things, it's done with araha, all those things, Rob. How do you look after you? Like, we've talked about your obviously your family and whānau support, we've talked about your intimate tight network that has got an eye, but what do you also do that relaxes you and takes you away from some of the situations you put yourself in? What are the things that are healthiest in your life off the stage?
One of the things I love to do is fishing. Fishing either by myself or with my one of my closest cousins who's actually in the documentary. It's just a place to calm and unwind. Hearing my daughters laugh and thinking, oh God, that's your father's weird humour. I apologise. And all of that beauty that that my daughters, they are teaching me. They don't even know that they're teaching me of how to be. And that is a real gift, and it's pretty humbling. I'm just grateful.
Is it a critical moment in anyone's journey when they can open themselves to those simple joys again? I mean, getting there is what you're aiming for, isn't it? The simple joys that balance the stuff you're struggling with.
Absolutely. A great friend of mine, George Davis, who used to be general manager of Ngāti Raukawa Whānau Order, he said, he watched Shop Row and he stood up and he said, I'm teaching the youth to celebrate the little victories. And I've taken that conversation through to different forums. And I say, little victories like, I got out of bed today when I wanted to stay in bed for a week. Pat yourself on the shoulder. I got the kids to and from school alive. Yay. Pat yourself on the shoulder. We're too busy waiting for the massive mountain we're going to conquer. We need to really be kind to ourselves and pat ourselves on the shoulder for small victories.
Kia ora, Rob, and thanks again for coming to the studio this morning.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Rob Mokoraka. As we said, the one-man play is Shop Bro, Confessions of a Depressed Bullet, and now there is a documentary on his life's journey, really. It's Shop Bro, screening on Māori TV and the spin-off website. Likely, I imagine, there are details on where you can find that on our webpage.